Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Irina from Jersey.
Hi, I'm Irina, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks to the God of my understanding of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that are described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, strong sponsorship, strong home group, and particularly staying focused on my primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't found necessary to pick up a drink since August 12, 2012. For that, I'm forever grateful. Thank you guys for having me here. I wish you the best in the next hour or so on this journey that you will be walking alongside with me. When we read the set-aside prayer, when one of the many Chris's, I assume, in this meeting, I read the set-aside prayer, it just reminded me the fact that I really don't know much about myself. So I hope today, as I get really, really uncomfortable and probably reveal some fairly intimate information about myself at the podium that I would definitely not reveal at a regular conversation with those normal folks. I hope that, you know, the journey that my life has taken will show evidence that the 12 steps can accomplish something. I can definitely say they've accomplished a lot in my life. I don't know how. If I did, I'd probably write a manual of, the backwards way of doing the 12 steps, because I don't know about any of you, I'm not the biggest fan of a thoroughly honest inventory. I'm not the biggest fan of making amends. I'm not a biggest fan of, you know, doing a thorough 10 step or, you know, to the best of my ability, at least, of actively participating in my day-to-day life when I, you know, have my moments of, you know, human experience, when I have a fear, resentment, whatever it may be, crop up, to go to God, you know, to go to another human being and to think about someone else. Like, that just, it's not natural to me. Probably what's, out of all those things, what's the least natural is to go to God. It's fairly easy for me to, when I have something happen in my life, I don't want to say traumatic, because to me they're traumatic, right? Like, I don't know, the pencil fell. I'm like, oh my God, I screwed up in life. It's just life. And life happens whether, you know, I'm an alcoholic or whether, you know, in a parallel universe where I'm not an alcoholic and I'm ruling the universe. Just life happens. And the hardest thing is to have humility in that particular moment and to admit on a subconscious and a conscious basis that I'm not going to be the solution to my problems. That's really tough. It's fairly easy to still, at least for me, to have some sort of ownership over the outcome of those particular actions when I go to other people. And that's not something I'm necessarily proud of. Because when I go to people periodically, I have these things called judgments and opinions. And even though I may smile and like nod my head, I can't help but, again, be human and have those said judgments and opinions. So for some reason, even a solution through a human power periodically, at least at this point in my sobriety, I somehow still don't have the experience of that, like the humbleness of getting down on my knees and letting God know that I screwed up. Or letting God know, like, I can't do anything about this. Now, there have been times in my sobriety that I can clearly recall, like, you know, years, I don't have that much time, but still, like, years of being sober and literally being, like, in tears of, I cannot help myself but continuously act out this way, and I know it's no longer a choice. I said, God, please, if it is your will, please remove this. I beg you. You know, I've had the moment, the latest time was this past summer, with really intense moments. I mean, I like to think, at least, you can ask other people that are in my network whether this is true or not, obviously. I'd like to think that I continuously take the spirit of 6 and 7 on through, you know, my life. But this very profound experience was last summer, and I was at a wedding of my boyfriend's sister's wedding, and you know, there's been some character defects I just like to label as, you know, me being weird or just me being, you know, like very vulgar or me being whatever it is. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into exact detail, at least for this particular set of scenarios, because there's a whole lot of backstory, but we all have something, right? And I just make an excuse, and I suffer a lot of consequences for this particular behavior, because what happens is, you know, I wind up being alone. I get rejected so many times because of this particular behavior that I can no longer make an excuse for it. And it's not necessarily the rejection of the general public or a particular group. It's the rejection of people that I sincerely do not want to reject me. It's the people that I don't necessarily want to be liked by, but it's the people that I want to be loved by, that can no longer on a safe basis be around me because I continue to behave in a certain way. And it's easy for me to say that I have a decision with those particular set of actions, just like I had a decision to pick up a drink. And there comes a moment in my life, multiple times, that I, in my heart, it's not that I feel broken. It's that I know if I don't break, everyone else has to suffer. And in that particular moment, you know, at this wedding, I privately, you know, get in the bathroom, like half in tears, like, God, please help me. I say the third step, I do my 6 and 7. I don't necessarily have the profound experience, so to speak. I don't see any angels. Yeah, I don't hallucinate or anything else. I don't see a burning bush or anything fun that I may have had when I was not necessarily sober. But I have the experience of being humble. And if I can summarize my overall journey as to why, you know, 4 to 5 years of being in and out of institutions, 4 to 5 years of all sorts of colorful places, and being arrested, having the so-called consequences that if I were to share with, you know, with again, the general population, they would look at me like deer in a headlights and be like, what, that happened to you? Are you okay? I'll pay for your therapist, you know, like those things, right? After all of those things, like, that's not the thing that got me sober. And that's not the thing that kept me sober. It was the utmost feeling of the humbleness to say that alcohol got me. Essentially, we summarize as the first step experience. And when I first got sober, I questioned my... I had, you know, other sponsors before this, you know, sponsors that, I don't know, I feel really bad for them that they had to sponsor me. I finally got a sponsor that was probably just as crazy as I was at one point, if not more. I'm so grateful for that. And that, like, wasn't necessarily, it was able to see through all my BS, but it was able to see through my BS and say, that's not your craziness, that's not your BS, that's your, like, utmost fear of being vulnerable. That is your humanity trying to seep through you, and you're just afraid. And you know, we have that experience, and I can sincerely speak we in the particular use pronoun, because that is the 12-step experience. When one alcoholic speaks to another, and you can't help but, like, the truth just comes out of each other's mouths. You just can't help it. And I remember this particular sponsor had this weird thing about, you have to make sure that people have had their first step experience. And I really, you know, years go by and I really do understand this particular methodology, and that's, are you willing to do some stupid thing, right? Like, I remember I was about, when I say stupid, I'll explain to this in a minute. It's just being willing to do anything that I may disagree with. And it may not directly benefit my recovery, but am I willing to, you know, if you tell me to jump on one foot, am I going to do that? Or am I still too much in my head thinking about how I'm going to look, how am I going to look like, what is going to happen, and then what are the repercussions to my reputation? Like, okay, like, I've already been, you know, arrested so many times. I, you know, had a dreadlock right before I got sober, quite literally from not showering. So I didn't really have a reputation to speak for. But still, to have that. And, like, am I willing to go out of my way even if I don't necessarily agree with the action? And so I think I recall being about 2 years sober, and the following sponsor, in a similar fashion of sponsorship, she would have me periodically, she would question my willingness, right, my first step experience, and she would have me even do such silly things as, she had me read, like, The Velveteen Rabbit once. It's a children's book. And I remember she gave me this set of directions, and I'm like, are you crazy? And right away, and I can recall this feeling, because I don't necessarily get it that often, but especially in the beginning of my sobriety, I've gotten that, like, the moment I wake up. And it's like, that my e-brake just goes on in my body. Like, no, absolutely not. And outside of what my head, right, tells me to do, my feet take a completely different set of actions, and I read The Velveteen Rabbit. And it may seem really minute about this particular example of a first step experience. I don't know exactly why I'm sharing any of this with you now. I really don't. You can talk to my God after the meeting and ask him, because I really can't answer that one for you. But I still, the most profound learning curve that I had in sobriety is when I have that moment of my e-brake going on, I like blindly take a particular suggestion. Or I've built in certain things that I do, right? When I have experiences that I've had in the 10th step, or, you know, with the period of my sobriety when I actually called my sponsor every day to call someone blindly, right? To go out of my way and do some sort of service blindly. And without having that been ingrained in me in sobriety, and without the other factor of simply alcohol, I can curse here, right? No one's going to be offended, cry, good. Without alcohol kicking my fucking ass, I would not be able to stand in front of you today. And life happens to kick my ass too, so periodically. But today I'm grateful to have the so-called 12 steps, at least is how I've interpreted them and used them in my life to fall back on. So I guess I'll start off with where I came from, you know, what happened and what life is like now, the usual spiel that we go through. So I'm originally from Russia. That does not explain why I'm an alcoholic, but kind of does at the same time. At least it explains why I got sober so early on. So I from an early age, like I didn't really, and I can also speak about other I'll briefly mention non-conference approved substances, not necessarily dive into them, but I may mention a name here and there. So growing up in Russia, I only knew two things, and that was vodka and heroin, nothing else, because that's Russian life. There's lots of vodka, and there's some people that do heroin. We don't talk to them. We don't deal with them. And I did not know about the concept of alcoholism. I sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thought it was a decision that people like my grandfather make. And they drink two or three bottles, you know, of vodka. They beat their wives as they cry that they love them. And they attack their granddaughters. And they take all the money from the family. And they sleep with half the town and tell their wives. And I sincerely thought that was a decision that my grandfather made. My last memory of my grandfather, we moved to the States and we came back for a short period of time, and my grandfather was drunk. I mean, I don't think there was only one or two times I've ever seen him not, you know, not be under the influence of vodka. And my grandfather attacked me physically, just belligerent blackout. I don't necessarily recall the reasons why, but, you know, that stuff happens. And ironically enough, at the end of my drinking, I also became the violent drunk attacking people. And I'll get into that later on as well. And that was the last time I saw my grandfather. And I run out of the apartment and my grandmother is, you know, like trying to hold me back to stay. And I think back of my family, both of them have passed away. And today, thankfully, I don't call Alan on the dark side of the force anymore, but it makes me realize this concept that we talk about in AA, where alcoholism is a family disease. I think that's right, AA, we have that term thrown around. I think it's more rehab talk, I believe, but it's still, it's very profound in our literature that we talk about other people that are not necessarily alcoholic. And it's insane that people around us get as sick as they do. Just absolutely crazy. So I was pretty drawn to alcohol at an early age. I don't think that makes me an alcoholic. That's my variation of alcoholism. I remember I constantly would like sip, you know, wine and beer, and my parents just thought it was funny that I maybe, my mom tells me now, she was convinced that I didn't have enough like probiotics or something in my belly, that was why I was constantly stealing the beer, leftover beer. So when I was little, and every year she changes the year of when this happened, like whether I was 2 or 4 years old. So they decided to teach me a lesson, and if anyone here has ever tried teaching an alcoholic a lesson, it doesn't end well. So she put a shot of vodka underneath the table, and I was like this little child, and she's like, she's gonna take the vodka, she's gonna hate it, and she's never gonna drink again. And she tells me that I crawled underneath the table, I took the shot of vodka, I smiled, and I just had this like little tear going down my face, and that was it. That did not stop me from drinking at all. She doesn't tell me what happened later, but I assume I just play with my toys, and you know, there was like lots of car crashes and all this like fun stuff that happened. And that pretty much the fun I had then summarizes the fun I had up until like the age of 14, and then it just all went down from there. So we moved to the States, and other things started happening, which are pretty common to alcoholics, at least the ones that I've met in AA. This, you know, other life stuff, you know, just shit. You know, daddy didn't like me, daddy beat me, you know, my uncle touched, whatever, all those things like started happening. So I went from having an awesome, awesome family. Again, this does not make me an alcoholic, but I'll tell you one thing. I'll say it in a few minutes, what it helped me do. I was getting really bullied at school. I spoke broken English. I think my English has gotten a little bit better, but still can be pretty broken periodically. And I was very awkward looking. I had glasses. I had acne at a very young age. So little kids weren't like, oh my God, you're so pretty. Come hang out and be our friend. Like, no, they're like, you're weird and you're foreign. Go away. So, and at the same time, my parents started having issues, marital issues of their own. And by the age of 14, I got very suicidal. And I don't know. See, again, things I don't want to talk about, right? I was 14 years of age, and I remember sitting on my parents' couch, and I'm looking at my father's pills. He had heart issues, and I'm contemplating which ones to take and how many. And my little brother, who's 4 at the time, we're 10 years apart, like walks in the room, and he had the same look. The best way I can describe it is the same exact look that people have when you've had a very profound 12-step experience. I've had a sponsee that had an extremely profound 12-step experience. It's like that look in their eyes. My little 4-year-old brother looked at me that way. And 14 years of age, like being a little bit dramatic, emo, whatever you want to call it, it must have been a very, very long time since I've seen someone look at me in that way. It was a very long time until before, you know, like that I felt loved. And whether that was true or whether that was clouded by very early alcoholism, that's actually true. I just realized it must have been clouded by very early signs of alcoholism. I was given the grace in that particular moment to have that experience. And I made the alcoholic compromise, as I like to call it, and I decided that I'm going to drink every day instead of killing myself. And there began, you know, my nightly, like, stealing, like, a little bit of booze from my parents, just enough. And to kind of, you know, just, I don't have to explain it, just, you know, it was just enough for the 14-year-old me. And 2 years later, you know, the physical allergy presented itself. So I just finally got to, you know, I had an unlimited amount of alcohol, or, you know, unlimited meaning I possibly could not drink that much. And it kind of went on from there. 2 years after the fact, No, I'm sorry. So it was 16. So that same year, I visited my first institution due to some non-conference approved substances. And the delusion that I had was that it was those particular substances. And I think, you know, having come from the background that I was, again, with this dichotomy between like heroin and alcohol, I knew like I can't go here and that I'm eventually going to go here. So I have to prevent going here. And that will push me to go to my first treatment facility. And I was just under the impression that I have to get the dry goods out. And that was it. Again, alcohol was a choice. And life made it very evident to me that that is not the fact. And to sum up my overall set of consequences, to say it that way, of just, you know, the spiraling down, that's really it. By the age of 18, I started getting arrested, and, you know, my first drug charge, another drug charge. I left high school. I dropped out of high school twice, because you can do that apparently, not just once, but twice. Not due to a lack of intellect, a lack of ambition, etc., but simply because I blamed it on them. Because it was very, very difficult to stay sober, and I try to, like, you know, be sober when I go to school. Because that's, you know, what you're supposed to do, is like be sober when you go to school. And it was very difficult for me to maintain eye contact with anyone. So, and I had that early on in sobriety too. If I was sober, and it was like petrifying to go to the mall and have to like look at people. I don't necessarily recall what thread of like of thoughts I had, whether they were thinking about me or X, Y, and Z. I just had too many thoughts to really pick one. So it was like a volcano, like a whatever tornado of thoughts. And I'm like, I'm about to lose my mind. I need to get out of here and be alone. And the beauty about being in an AA meeting early on is like those seem to diminish just like a little bit. I'm not saying they do completely, but just a little bit. Where at least it's like one thread or two thread at a time. It's not like an overwhelming tornado. At least beginning, you know, before for me, at least I had the 12 steps under my belt. So I'm going to treatment facilities. I'm, you know, dropping out of high school to stay alive, as I like to call it. Being surrounded by just, you know, crazy, crazy people. And fast forward, however many facilities I was going to at that point. Oh, by the way, so after this meeting, sorry, I'm going to be all over the place. So my sponsor, and to my two sponsors, and I, we have to go check out an adolescent facility in this town. I believe it's in this town, right? That I stayed in when I was 17. But I have to go make amends to them. And just a brief short story, just so you guys may laugh at me a little bit. I was in there because I relapsed on alcohol, and I thought that was a complete bunch of baloney. And my first instance was they finally caught on that I was a, like, I have to, well, one, I have to make sure that this is the right facility because I don't necessarily recall. But they finally caught on to my bullcrap. You know, that was just like trying to lie, and I do that fairly well. I don't know if anyone else can identify with that. But, you know, I go into a rehab, and I'm like, I'm going to be an A student. I'm going to be an A rehab student, A plus. And they just caught, like, they caught on, like, they knew I was full of crap. And definitely not a facility to, like, F around with. And they put everyone in this circle, and they had two chairs in the middle. So that was, like, the start of, like, problems. So they called one person to one of the seats. They called me out, and I had to sit on my hands. And one person at a time, they began to tell me a bunch of lovely things about myself. So I finally revealed my true identity to a number of the counselors. I mean, all the counselors there. I threw the chair across the room. I stormed out, told them to go F themselves. And 2 days, you know, whatever many days later, my parents came. We were not allowed to see our family for the first week we were there. And long story short, the manager of the rehab, or whatever, the woman that got to speak to the parents, I spit in her face across the room, and it must have been fairly good aim, because she was like that pole about, or maybe look a little bit closer. Like, it must have been a little bit closer. I don't want to identify like a person in the audience, because that would just be terrible. But like, I got her right in the face, and they called the police, you know, and I'm like screaming. I'm like, you don't understand. It was just alcohol. Like, it's not fair. I'm kicking in my parents' car, like throwing a scene. I'm telling them I'm going to kill myself if I go back in there. And they're like, sorry, we'll put you in the hospital and you'll come right back. And so if you threaten to burn the rehab down, they will let you go. So After today's meeting, I have to go and make sure that's the correct facility, if I can somehow, you know, do something for them. But coming back to the insanity, so, you know, several years go by, and at that point, I think alcohol, the other stuff stopped working. The alcohol, I mean, really was not working. Nothing was doing the trick, because I would come out of my house and the consequences would come a little bit too soon, so I wasn't able to really enjoy myself for like long enough. And I locked myself. I say I got locked myself in my house. I just got a boyfriend, you know, babysitter, whatever term you want to use. You know, we have them when we're sober too, babysitters. So I have a babysitter. The babysitter, you know, left my life, all dramatic, because you guys can imagine what kind of person it would be willing to date me at that point. So I finally leave my house, and I already know by that point, you know, the scary thing about alcoholism, like, such frightening. It's knowing that the second you walk out of the house, like, you're going to find a way to get it. You may not have money, you may not have anything, but you will get it. I don't even know how. I don't even know with who, but I'm going to get it. And not on purpose. It's like an accident. Like, I walk into it, and someone's like, here you go. Thank you. Where's more? So about a very, very short period of me drinking, and I, when I say short, I mean it was about a month. I'm at Seaside Heights, and I can just end my story right there, if anyone's been to Seaside, because it's never, like, a good experience. You just get arrested right away. So I'm going to, a lot of what I'm about to tell you is basically like the police report, because I don't remember. So I had two warrants for my arrest at that point due to unpaid fines. So imagine this, you're on the beach, you're kind of like really shit-faced, you're urinating on the beach, because urinating outside is always better than inside. The police approach you, so what do you do? You know, do you run away? Where do you go? Into the water. So that was my last drink. So I didn't know that. So the police did chase after me. Later on, when I went to the court to face several charges, I got to thank the police officer. And he was very concerned. He was very nice. He's like, you know, my cousin had an issue. He's in Florida. He's, like, really happy. I'm like, you do know you chased after me into the ocean? Like, it's so very, very nice man. I think when I went to court, all of Seaside Heights, like, knew what happened, because I had no idea they actually processed me before going to the hospital. And they said that I called one of the police officers. I was, like, Batman and, like, you know, the asylum. I don't know what was happening. I don't know if I was hallucinating, what was going on, but I was dodging invisible bats. Yeah, I didn't think I was that bad. So, and I wake up in the hospital the next day, and this is the allergy. Another aspect of the allergy was, you know, I just started, and you're not going to tell me I'm going to stop. So I call my parents at that time, and my poor mother, I mean, I cannot imagine what people that I've chosen or were not able to choose, whether or not they participated in our lives, had to go through. And my poor mother, she's on the phone. I have an ulcer. I don't know if that was true or she, whatever, but it doesn't matter. Your father's in the hospital because of a heart issue, because of, you know, my shenanigans. And I tell my mom, that's really nice, but the cops beat me up and you need to get me out of here. It was not my choice to say that. I needed to leave. Thankfully, I mean, they were not. They were pulling me out of the ocean. I'm screaming, I don't want to live here anymore. Ah! So they did not let me leave the hospital. Very grateful for that. And unwillingly, you know, I when they finally are, they transfer me to another facility, and I think I've detoxed just enough, and they tell me that I'm facing all of these charges. I, you know, screwed up my probation, et cetera, et cetera. And like, what do you want to do? I'm like, obviously I want to go to rehab. Did I want to go to rehab? No, I just didn't want to go to jail. So, and the miracle, right, of how God sincerely works through the people here. The first, like, angels or whatever term you want to use, just like a really, really awesome man. He was like a really cool guy. And there's gals too, it doesn't matter, but he just happened to be, you know, he just happened to be of that gender, sex, whatever. He worked in my facility, and for some reason, I really just trusted him. I was able to go to him when, you know, the fun thing about rehab kind of stopped, right? When weird things were going on, you know, like when the weird thing is going on in rehab between the girls and the boys and the girls and the girls and the boys and the boys, and you're like, ugh. So I went to him, and I don't know whether it was just what he said or the way he looked at me or the way that I felt. Like, I felt safe and I felt okay. And I just said, fine, another day. I didn't think I limited, I just said, fine. And I think that's the first AA-based experience that I had. And, I mean, I get out of rehab, you know, let's just skip all the other fun stuff, you know, rehab romance, you know, all that good stuff, going to meetings and crying because my rehab boyfriend is relapsing, surprise. Let's just skip all that. I'm too embarrassed to talk about it now. So, and I finally, at that point, you know, when the relationship broke, God's so good. God's so, like, God doesn't kill you, but he almost kills you. And then he's like, okay, come on. So, I had this one thing, you know, kind of going back to my grandmother, my grandma, and my grandpa, you know, like the codependent thing, you know, like he fixed her and she fixed him, kind of weird thing dynamic. And so I had the relationship on being one of that, and I'm really grateful of that. Again, like, you know, my babysitters, I had babysitters and detoxes that I would, you know, take breaks with and through. So I'm grateful that God broke the delusion that he was not going to get me sober. He did it very gracefully, not that painful. It could have been much, much, much worse. Even though at that point, it was probably one of the most painful experiences that I've had. And I, ironically enough, you know, meet the right person at the right meeting. I call the right person at the right time, etc. And little by slowly, I get introduced to the solution. So the same solution the first 100 members of Alcoholics Anonymous got taken through. Doesn't that sound nice? It actually wasn't 100, but that sounds really nice. So under 100 alcoholics got taken through. And that's essentially, you know, step 1, 2, and 3, you're done. And you're your fourth step right there and then. I'm not necessarily advocating that every single person should be taken through the steps quickly. I'm not saying that there's some people that do it wrong. Oh, no, it's not it. It's just I was dying. If I didn't get taken through that particular methodology of the 12 steps, I would have died. And miracles started happening. I think the first miracle was I got done with my fourth step. I did my 6 and 7, you know, that hour. I made a couple amends. And then I was told that now I can look for sponsees. And that was weird to me. I'm like, you do realize I currently don't have my license. I'm like, I think the most, like, wonderful thing that I had was the fact that I showered on a daily basis and brushed my teeth. Like, I didn't forget to do those things. I could tell directions finally. I mean, there's some holes in my brain that'll never heal. But by that time, a lot of them did. So I was able to sound coherent at least for 5 minutes. That's a big deal. And they're like, oh, you're going to go sponsor people now. Like, I'm going to kill people. I'm not going to sponsor them. So, and the beautiful thing, you know, our literature talks about, you know, because God is everything or God is nothing. God is not going to give me the sponsee that needs another kind of, like, a really serious sponsor. God's going to take care of his people like he's taking care of me. And so, so true and so evident. And I've had some wonderful women come into my life. that made me question my sanity when they would call me at 2 in the morning and would talk to me about 40 minutes about something ridiculous. And that was the first lesson where my sponsor told me, you know, there's some people you really cannot help and you should probably move on. You know, working with others, you know, if they don't want what you got, you don't want them, just leave them. Put your energy elsewhere. And again, some very, very profound experiences of actually experiencing alcoholism. Like, I knew I had an alcohol problem, or not necessarily a problem. I had a sobriety problem, and I just never had enough money problem. But I really felt alcoholism. I felt the pain of what an alcoholic feels when he or she does not have anything in their body. That is a pain that normal people, and I say normal meaning non-alcoholic folk that have a drinking problem, cannot understand. That is, when I put the drink down, my life gets profoundly worse, and if I stay sober for an extended period of time, my life gets a lot more worse and a lot more colorful than it was in the beginning. And I continued, the best way I can summarize it is to blindly, right, because I didn't really have anything left in my life. I still didn't have a license, and I was couch surfing for some time. Just, I had sponsees, like, drive me to meetings, which is awkward. So now when I sponsor people, like, you have no excuse. God, it must suck to, I'm sorry, guys. Sorry that you have me as a sponsor. But there's no excuse. Absolutely none. And the third step, right, he tells us that we continue to do his work well, that, you know, he would provide for us. And so evident, like, I focus on going to meeting, finding a sponsee, even though my life is on complete fire, even though I'm like, I just applied to food stamps and God reject it. You know, kind of life. I don't know why I said that with that accent. I hope that wasn't offensive. I did not mean that. I take it back. God, 2017, you should not be saying those things. And I would continue, right? So I will go, like, find a commitment to a detox, find a commitment to rehab, and I'd say yes, and how I would get there, I'd figure it out. I had a commitment in my home group, and I figure it out. I figure it out. And my life at that point got on fire yet again, you know, those particular wonderful thoughts that I used to get. And, you know, the right person will call me at the right time to take me to the right meeting, to meet the right person every single time. All I had to do was do my best. Do my best at helping the next alcoholic. And, if you think you're bad, there's someone out there worse than you. And if you're ashamed of what's going on in your head, I promise you that if you put up your hand and say it, or just tell someone, a lot of people will probably agree. They just may seem to look better managed than you think you do, but that's the only difference. They may be able to pretend to be a little bit more like well-functioning human beings than you do, but it doesn't mean anything at all. You know, if you're anything like me, those thoughts will get you screwed. It's like a allergy, you know, to the thoughts. Like, you'll get screwed eventually. It just depends how long you wanna keep the rodeo going. And, you know, I would go from one couch to the next. I got a job, steady job. I somehow get to the job all the time. I find, you know, made friends. I'm not gonna, stupid stuff. It just worked out. I got my license back. I got all those wonderful life things back. If you knew my resume today, you would not probably think that I'm the person that I was. I'm in a really awesome, amazing school. Pursuing an amazing, you know, degree. I have all those, like, little, like, ducks are in a row. I didn't get there because I worked really hard at those things. Half the time I didn't, if I'm being thoroughly honest. It's not like I worked my butt off to get the A's that got me into the school that I did. That's not the case. I went to the right people, like people that told me to go to that person and talk to them and ask them for advice, and I took their advice and followed through with it. I went to people and I said, I'm kind of dealing with this stuff, and they said, why don't you do this? And I said, I disagree with you, but I'm going to go do this. Right, the same, it was like Velveteen Rabbit, but with like academia. That was weird. That's all that I did. I would sit in class and I would find someone that needed help, right? Like practicing like the 12th step, and I would help them. I would, this is actually really funny. Well, I should really say it's the 11th step, not the 10, but you know, I wrote out all the, you know, who am I resentful at, like self, you know, all those like the four things, out on my math exams before I took my math exam. And just erase it afterwards and hope like my professor doesn't see like the little traces of, you know, all those names. Just to get my head cleared. I did those things. And I would pick up and call back my sponsees before that. I would try to find new sponsees. And I just got here. I wish I could take credit for more of the things that, you know, have come out in my life. Sometimes I do, and then I go on through these like wonderful periods of hating Alcoholics Anonymous, going into a meeting and making a list of all the reasons why I hate every single person here, and hearing someone laugh and be like, you don't mean that, you're miserable. And then I go through, you know, it's like, and the speaker talks, and I'm like, they're full of crap. They don't live like that. They're just saying that just to be cool. And then I get to go home, and I get to think about those things some more, as all of those people get to go home and spend time with their families and loved ones and hang out with their friends, and I just get to think about them. I think that's like a pretty normal, you know, period of sobriety. And then as to what happened when I had this particular period of sobriety, I mean, it happens often. It happens like once every 2 weeks, you know, like, but I mean like a long-term kind of thing. It's not like just the one day where I let myself, I'm like, I'm gonna just get away with all those thoughts. Just gonna really like enjoy my hatred towards like humanity right now, and I mean I love that, you know. I don't know, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm also human. I like to think I'm like the coolest person in the room, even though I'm obviously not. Far from it. So, I mean, you guys heard my story. I'm obviously not the coolest person in the room. So, like she had dreadlocks from being dirty. Oh, so. So I had this period last summer. So, you know, I got into the school, you know, of my dreams, and life was pretty cool, and I had a cool boyfriend and like all of this, and I look so cool on a resume, and all these people just suck, and I don't want to worship my sponsor anymore. Like, my sponsor sucks. Not my current one, my old one. So, you know, because I had this idea that I have to like worship my sponsor. That my sponsor is like this complete, like the epitome of Jesus. And she just comes into my life and she's like, oh, I'm here to solve all your problems and set the example for you that your mother and father never have been able to. Not true, right? She's still an alcoholic. And then I find out how alcoholic she is or how sick she is. And I'm just like, holy cow, you're going to give me advice? No. So I had that like weird that weird experience in AA, and I'm like, okay, so that juice, right, that people talk about, like you join a cult and you drink the jungle juice, like the jungle juice just wore off. So I had to really change my program of recovery. I had to start becoming normal, like a normal person who happens to be in recovery. Because before, I was just a person in recovery. I had no other identity. You ask me, what are you? I'm in recovery. That's it. My name is Arena, but I'm in recovery. And I really had to start changing that because it wasn't working anymore. Like, it just was not working. And I got a new sponsor. And, I heard a speaker share. I talked to her, a couple times, on the phone. And she goes to me, she's like, Arena, what do you mean this crazy idea that you need to have a sponsor for 20 years? And they have this, like, it's just, I had these weird, bizarre ideas. And she's like, I've had so many sponsors. I have learned this from this sponsor, and I had learned from that sponsor, and just, like, moved on. And she was so casual about it. I was like, what do you mean, move on? And she taught me this really bizarre thing, and that's, when God speaks to me, and he speaks to me in nudges, say, this is not working out for you anymore, right? Like I have, I've moved through, like, friends, not that I've moved through, but just, our recovery's changed, and our priorities in life's changed, and it's just, I'm like, I don't want to be friends with you because you're doing some things or I'm doing some things, and I just can't be rigorously honest with you and have a friendship with you anymore. You just move on, right? And those nudges, right? Like those God nudges. It's okay to say yes and just do them, even though all the ideas in your head are telling you that you're wrong. And so my program in this past year really started changing dramatically because I'm a full-time student. I commute to my school. I have a job. I have a relationship, life. And I don't have time to make meetings every day. On really busy weeks when I have finals, when I'm trying to get enough sleep so I can function okay the next day, I may make one meeting a week. Am I on fire right now at the podium? No. And my program had to turn into more of an action where I go through the day and I do something screwed up. I'm like, I have to go make an amends. I said something really mean to someone, and I can totally, this person has no idea I'm in the program. I don't have to tell my sponsor, to tell my network. When no one's hovering over me, like, what action do I take? And that's what program is today for me. What action do I take when no one's around? Because I don't have alcoholics in my life in my life 24/7. I'm always on the phone with someone. You can ask my boyfriend, he'll tell you. But it just looks different, and it has to, because I don't have time. But that does not mean that and our literature describes it really well, I'm not going to quote it, I'm not going to misquote it, but it says something along the lines of that this is, this is just like a life, like this is what you live. This is not how do I behave when I go to that one meeting, once a day or whatever it is, 3, 4, 5 meetings a week, and how do I behave in that particular moment in front of my sponsees or whatever it may be. It's what do I do when absolutely no one's around? And that's completely different. It's how accountable do I choose to keep myself when I do my periodic 11 step and I send to my sponsor, I do it in my head sometimes, or how accountable am I when I'm, talking to someone in my network, and I really, like, don't want to say, like, a couple things, because there's always something, like, I'm a fiend, so what I do is I do this thing that I have, like, I have, like, there's, like, an action plan to do terrible things. And there's 7 steps, and then I have the first step, right? Like, I got her number, right? First step. That's like a really stupid example. But, and do I now, like, what do I do with this first step? Do I keep it a secret because I know what I can do with it? Or do I just, like, let someone in my network know? And I probably could not describe the program That's the best way I can describe the program of action today in my life. It's just being, continuing to be rigorously honest and picking up my phone, calling people back, meeting with my sponsees, meeting with my sponsor, and questioning myself when I make certain decisions of whether I will be okay telling my sponsees that this is the decision that I made with this particular life choice. Because I sponsor not by a flow of whatever, not by what I think you should do. I try my best to sponsor through an example. And the examples in my life have not always been positive. There's been plenty of negative ones, but the question that I always have for myself and that I like to think my sponsors have for me is, what decision do I make afterwards? And that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much for having me today.